Blog Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Gangish of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to our webinar entitled Lead Generation, Your Number One Survival Strategy for 2009. I'm pleased to be today's speaker, and before we get started, I'd like to thank our partner, Marketo, for hosting this session and also providing it back to all of you as a pre-recorded podcast. Hopefully, you'll find today's conversation helpful as you look for ways to not just survive, but also thrive in 2009. As I was preparing for today's webinar, I couldn't help but reflect on the differences in marketing between 2008 and what we're seeing in 2009. And while a lot of people are very worried about the economy and are very worried about the role of marketing in 2009, I actually see it as a great year to be a marketer. I think it's such a great year to be a marketer, and I'm calling it the perfect opportunity. That's how I would describe 2009. And the analogy is like the perfect storm. When a certain set of conditions that are very unique all come together at one time to create a very large and memorable event. Well, I think the same thing is true for marketing this year, and I call it, again, the perfect opportunity. And the three things that I see that have come together this year is, number one, your companies are asking you for help in ways that they've never asked for before. They're asking you to make a revenue impact in the company. Number two, the technology is absolutely there. We have a plethora of Web 2.0 tools at our disposal, and they all work. They help us do better lead generation. And number three, the buyer behavior is certainly on board with being online. Most of our clients and prospects use the internet to find out about solutions. And if we can be there and have those conversations with them, then we're going to win and they're going to become our customers. So with that as the backdrop, think about 2009 as being the perfect opportunity for marketers. Let me share with you a little bit about the Pedowitz Group, and then we'll do an agenda, and then we'll jump right into our presentation today. Now, as demand generation marketers, we see demand generation as an emerging category. It is still very new. It is still being defined. So congratulations to all of you for being on this webinar or listening to this podcast. You probably represent 4 to 5% of the top marketers for B2B organizations in the United States today. At the Pedowitz Group, we're early adopters and practitioners in the field, and we have actually sat in your seat. We've had our CEO come to us and say, what are you going to do about revenue? And then we've had to respond to that. So while we will be presenting some research, we certainly are not experts in research, but what we live, breathe, eat, and sleep is demand generation. Now, about today's agenda. What I'd like to do is divide it into three sections. First, I'll share with you the research, or at least pieces of the research that we conducted through the fall of 2008, and I'll talk about four different questions. This research was conducted in two ways. We did 18 one-on-one interviews with top leaders in demand generation. These are marketers who were doing it better than anybody else. We also did a very large online survey as part of our participation in the online marketing summit last summer and into the fall. So we'll kind of take a look at this research and we'll glean from that what are the best practices, what are the top leaders in demand generation doing. From this research and from our participation in the market and from our many, many conversations with marketers, we have put together something called the laser approach, and I'm going to present this to you as well. This is basically a best practices approach, almost like a step-by-step guide to building and growing your demand generation competency. So whether you're brand new at this, have done nothing, or whether you're more advanced and just trying to get to the next level, the laser has taken really all the best practices and put them into a step-by-step guide. And number three, because we have so many experts on the line today, I'd like to hear your survival strategies for 2009 and also answer your questions. So with that, let's get going. You will notice that when many of you registered, not all, but many, we had a question and on your form that you completed, and it was, tell us what your top lead generation challenge was for 2009. and here's how it broke down. And I don't think these are going to be surprising for anyone. 29% of you said that your number one lead generation challenge in 2009 was to improve lead quality. And I was delighted to see that this is still the winner. Because what this metric is telling us is, again, it's not so much about the number of leads in many companies. It's about the quality of the lead. And the quality of the lead is measured by, did it convert into a piece of business? And more as marketers, we're being held accountable for the impact that we make on revenue. Right behind improving lead quality was improving my own education. That was 26%. Again, I was delighted to see that number. When I first began my own demand generation journey, probably 4 or 5 years ago, there was nothing in the market to educate yourself on. Today, there are so many tools, there are so many webinars, there are so many publications where you can go out and improve your own personal education. And as marketers, this is incredibly important because as you embrace a demand generation competency for your company, you will see that this is actually a cross-functional competency. Sales has to be involved. Senior leadership has to be involved. So you need to be well educated so that you can then educate your company. And then our third lead generation challenge that you identified was improving the number of leads. And again, I think these top three metrics are all indicative of this laser-like focus that we as marketers are having put on us in 2009. The company wants leads, they want high-quality leads, and they want to see an impact on revenue. So with that as a backdrop, and right before we get into the research, I want to spend just one more minute talking about definitions. And again, demand generation or lead management or lead generation, whatever you want to call it, is still an emerging category. So everybody has a different definition for the same set of terms. So to put us all on the same playing field today, I want to give you what we consider to be the definition for demand generation. And it's very simple. It is the combined set of activities between sales and marketing that does two things. Number one, it puts high-quality leads into the top of the sales funnel. And number two, it helps sales pull opportunities through the sales funnel quicker and with higher close rates. In 2009, we're going to see an emphasis on number one. In 2010, you're going to begin to see much more of an emphasis on number two. Sales will begin to embrace these types of marketing automation technologies to actually help them in the sales process. And then the other definition is, what is this lead management marketing automation category? And very simply, it's just a set of powerful tools that automatically create digital relationships that result in high-quality leads. So we have an agenda. We have a set of definitions. So let's take a look at the research. And again, there were more questions than what I'm sharing with you today, and I just pulled out the ones that I thought that were the most pertinent for what we could learn for tools for surviving in 2009. One of the very first questions I asked when we were doing the study in 2008 was, what measurable contribution does marketing make to the company? And I think people could either answer that easily or they couldn't answer it at all. And certainly all the leaders that we interviewed could talk nonstop. When I asked this question, I would shut up and then they would just take off. And here are a couple of observations from those conversations that we had. First of all, when I was talking to these VPs and these directors, they used the language of business results. If I did not know who I was speaking to, I would not necessarily know I was speaking to someone in marketing. It could be someone heading operations. It could be someone heading sales. But they all talked about the language of business results. They weren't counting how many inquiries or how many hits they had to the website or how well their SEO was going. They talked about leads that converted in ways that meant something to the business. So, for example, here was one of the quotes that we heard. Anyone in a management position in the last 3 to 5 years knows that marketing is no longer about nice ads or hiring ad agencies. It is about getting results for the company, and that is the language that the leaders in demand generation were using. Observation number two, frequent and formal reporting. But the third observation was the most key, and that is these marketers were not afraid to use the R word, revenue. They were very clear about the impact that they were making on revenue, and their company was very clear about the impact they were making on revenue. Quote number two is actually from a good friend of mine who is VP of marketing for a technology company based in South Carolina. And she told me, she said, Debbie, lead generation was important last year, but this year it is everything. And we are seeing a lot of evidence of that. For example, Demand Gen Report just this week came out with a report where they did some analytics around budgets and how much time and effort and money was being spent on lead generation. And while other parts of the marketing budget are being cut, there seems to be an additional focus and additional monies that are flowing to lead generation. And it makes a lot of sense because in 2009, companies are not going to save themselves out of the recession. They're going to sell themselves out of the recession, and marketing is going to help lead the way. So discussion number one was, again, in discussion in the 18 one-to-one interviews that we had. But we also did an online survey. And in the next slide, we asked the 300 or so respondents, what percent of your budget in 2008 went for lead generation? Now, what I find interesting about this slide is that 44% of the respondents said that at least 50% of their budget was going to lead generation. And in 2008 from 2007, we saw a big bump in the amount of budget that was going to lead generation. And again, a lot of reports that we're seeing right now saying that that bucket of money being spent for lead generation is staying the same, and in many cases going a little bit higher at the expense of other budget items. And again, this is a trend that we are going to continue to see. Discussion number two. Then, again, in the one-to-one interviews, I asked these leaders, what gets measured in your company within the marketing group? And again, if I had closed my eyes, I would have thought I was talking to the VP of sales. And if you know VPs of sales, you could ask them where they are on quota any time of the night or day, and they can tell you exactly where they are against their quota. It was the same mindset with the leaders of demand generation that I spoke to. The metrics that they measured were metrics that counted, that meant something to the business. They were specific, and they were very top of mind. No one said, oh, I don't know, let me go check that out. They really were being driven, and they were very, very motivated by these metrics. And one of the quotes that I really liked from the interview was quote number one. And this senior VP told me, he said, Debbie, it's very important to never confuse activity with results. And I think that's one of the key takeaways for all marketers in 2009. Your company doesn't care about activity. They will care about results. And then, of course, observation number two, metrics that matter to the business. I've already spoken a little bit about that. They don't care about your SEO. They don't care about the number of inquiries. They don't care how many hits to the website. They care about high-quality leads. Did those convert to opportunities, and how many of those opportunities actually converted into business, and how much business did that mean for the organization? Many marketing organizations are now being measured by their contribution to pipeline. That is an actual metric that I'm seeing across a lot of companies. Observation number three I thought was particularly interesting, and you should really pay attention to this one as you take a look at growing your demand generation competency in 2009 and really surviving and showing the company that what you do can make a big impact. Observation number three is what they measured changed over time. So many of the top leaders that I spoke with, when they first began the demand generation efforts, they basically measured what they could. It might have been number of inquiries. It could have been a number of email opens. It could have been number of emails sent out. But the people who had gone all the way to the advanced stages of demand generation had truly changed what they measured from day one until they were in the advanced stages, so much so that one of the people that I interviewed, which was for a professional services company in the Midwest, he said, Debbie, I abandoned early metrics because the business did not care about them. What I measured 2 years ago was a joke. because what he measured now was the quality of leads to opportunities, opportunities to revenue, and his impact on the pipeline. So what you will measure will change over time. So getting a measurement capability in-house will be very important for you in order to survive in 2009. When we went to the online survey and we asked what metrics do you report on, here are the types of responses, and people could have multiple select responses in this area. 57% of the respondents told us that they reported and tracked number of leads generated by marketing. 50% still track inquiries, because, of course, that is where it all starts. But two of the most interesting metrics to me was that 47% of our respondents told me that they tracked the number of opportunities created from marketing leads, and 45% tracked the amount of business closed from marketing-generated leads. Those are key metrics in 2009. And if you can get to that level of measurement, and if you can show that level of impact, then you have all the justification for ROI for all the investment that you will ever need, at least for the lead generation part of the marketing organization. And I think if we were to ask these same questions at the end of 2009, I think that we would see bigger percentages here on these two key metrics. The third question that we ask in our interview, we ask people about how they did their role change as they took on responsibility and leadership for lead generation in their companies. How has your role changed in the last few years? I just about could not get people to stop talking about how much their role had changed. Major change in role. For example, quote number one, my role went from being all about brand to all about leads. Or quote number two, my role has changed in three ways. It is less creative, more people management focused, and very measurement driven. So again, as you embrace lead generation, demand generation as a competency, part of your role will change dramatically. The second observation was probably the most interesting thing that we found in the study. And we asked people, where did they come from? Did you grow into your role as head of demand generation in your company, or were you brought in from the outside? And we found that it was about 50-50. 50% of the people within the organizations that we interviewed grew into the role, and 50% were brought in specifically for this capability. That means the company hires a headhunter to go find someone with this experience and this background, come in specifically and be a lead generator for them. We also found a variety of things in these backgrounds. We found finance in the backgrounds. We found operations in the background. We found sales in the background. And it seemed to me that the most successful marketers in lead generation had other types of things in their background. One of the VPs we hired for a technology company based in California said, I was absolutely hired because I had a background in sales, operations, and demand generation. So companies are actually going out and seeking the specific set of capabilities for their companies. And observation number three, and again, this was not a direct question, but it came up in conversation. A lot of the people that we interviewed one-on-one actually had a quota for lead generation. They had a quota for quality leads, and they had a variable compensation tied to that. In a moment, I'll show you what the online survey had to say, but I think we're going to see more and more of that in 2009 and certainly in 2010, and we should, because if you're now going to be held accountable for your contribution to the pipeline, that is the same way that sales is being held accountable, and there's no reason why you should not get variable compensation on that. In the online survey, to find out more about this change in role, we had a question which read, which is true about your role? And so, again, you could select which one was true about you. 41% of our respondents told us that they grew into the current lead generation role from inside their company. 26% had sales or sales ops experience in their background. And 22%, a really interesting number, were hired from outside the company to come in and specifically build out a lead generation company. And a piece of guidance that I would give to any marketer who is involved in lead generation, grow that capability as much as you can, because I think it's the single hottest career place to be if you are in marketing. We also asked them in the online survey, 4% of your role, as in time, is actually spent in lead generation. And what you told us was that 42% of you spend at least 50% of your time in lead generation. And again, if you take a look at all the different things that we have to do as marketers, trade shows, PR, branding, product, all those kinds of things, again, what these leaders tell us is that focus on lead generation, focus on producing a revenue impact and a revenue result for the company, and that will be your number one way to survive and thrive in 2009. We also asked the variable compensation question to our online survey respondents. 54% said they have no kind of variable compensation whatsoever in their roles in marketing. But take a look at the next metric. 23% told us that part of their variable compensation was tied to their lead generation results. Again, I think at the end of 2009, we're going to see that that number will have gone up. The last question that I wanted to share with you from the study, so that we can have a conversation around what can you take away from this for survival tactics in 2009, is we asked the leaders in demand generation, if you could give a demand generation marketer, maybe they were new, one piece of advice, what would you tell them? Without fail, the first words out of all the interviewees' mouth was, you have to have a great relationship with sales. This is not a marketing job where you go off in a room and you figure all the stuff out by yourself. You have to be deeply ingrained and have a very collaborative working relationship with sales. Incredibly, incredibly important. One of our interviewees told me that, he said, Debbie, if you view sales as your number one constituency, create a real relationship with sales to the extent you won't want to let each other down. Sales has a vested interest in the success of marketing to create high-quality leads. Marketing has a vested interest in giving those high-quality leads, which convert to opportunities, over to sales. So whatever you're doing with sales today, having a better, closer working relationship with them in 2009 will be probably your number one survival tactic. Observation number two from our interviewees was, again, we've talked about it, measurement that counts. Give the company measurement that means something from a business perspective. And then the final observation, which I thought was one of the most compelling in this entire survey, was, you know, you really don't know what you don't know. And what the participants meant by that is when you first begin a demand generation journey, you've never done this before, and you do not know what it's going to look like at the end. You're going to learn and discover as you go through this, and the learning will be absolutely phenomenal. What you learn about your prospects, what you learn about campaigns, what you learn about using various channels, everything is a hypothesis in the early days until you've tested and experienced it, tracked it, and then said, is this the best that we can do? One of the quotes is from a good friend of mine, Jim Kaner, who is now over at M5Net. When he was talking about getting on board with demand generation, he said, Debbie, he said, if you're going to fail, fail fast and make sure you fail forward. Again, treat it as a hypothesis until you've tested it and you have proven it. So I think that is a great piece of advice from our very experienced marketers. Because these experienced marketers were obsessed with their relationship with sales, I went to the online marketing summit, and on the survey, I asked a couple of questions around, tell me about your sales and marketing alignment. And these results tell me that there is still not the level of collaboration required in companies. And again, in 2009, if you want to do a great job at creating leads, it's going to be that alignment with sales that's really going to help you. For example, 43% of the respondents said, marketing and sales in my company collaborate on lead generation requirements. That is an abysmal number. There is no way marketing can make this stuff up. You have to be collaborating with sales. 32% of the online marketing survey respondents said marketing and sales in my company have a common set of agreed-upon lead definitions. That is unbelievable. How can you not have a common set of lead definitions? And yet, I would say the overwhelming majority of companies that I work with, that's the first place that we start. 32% have a common set of definitions. But the 29% marketing and sales in my company do not have a common set of agreed upon lead definitions. Again, these are the basics, but I don't want to underplay how difficult it is to put those basics in place, how difficult it is to kind of pull down that wall between sales and marketing, but you have to make an effort. And again, in 2009, for you to be successful, you have to have that collaboration. And again, another number was 24% said marketing and sales in my company do not have a well-defined lead handoff process. Again, these metrics give you an idea of just how foundational the work needs to be in demand generation for you to be successful in 2009. The final question on the survey is, we wanted to find out about systems, because one of the things that our leaders in demand generation actually spent a great deal of time talking about was technology and analytics and reporting and how they really worked every day to improve the integration and the use of current technologies. So in our online survey, only about 45% of our respondents actually had a CRM system. 42% said that they had a marketing automation and they had a CRM system, but they're not integrated. And only 20% said that they did have systems that were integrated. And 17% didn't have a marketing automation system at all. Again, if you take a look at the winners, the leaders, and if you take a look at how you're going to survive and thrive in 2009, if you have marketing automation, you have to have it integrated with CRM. You need to push, push, push to get that done. If you don't have a marketing automation system and you're anywhere north of $10 million, you absolutely positively need to look at that because it can make such a huge difference on your business. And as the marketers, we're not really predisposed to be embracing technology. And yet for survival going into the future, we're going to have to embrace and really leverage these technologies that are on the market today. So, again, through the summer and through late fall of last year, we conducted these surveys and these discussions with these marketers. We learned a lot from that. And one of the things that we learned is that nobody has a step-by-step guide. Remember the comment, you don't know what you don't know? And so we thought about that, and we said, what if we could put together an approach that would be a step-by-step guide? Now, it's not all the steps, but it's the big steps that you need to take, really a step-by-step process for creating and implementing a successful demand generation program. Whether you were just beginning or whether you were already in it and just wanted to take it up to the next level. So we put together an approach that we called LASER, and it's really a step-by-step guide for growing your demand generation competency. And this is hot off the press. I mean, this is going to be sent to all the webinar attendees, and it is literally in press today and is going out to the very first group of people on Friday of this week. So you are the very first people to see and to hear about this. And let me share with you the actual LASER approach. We've identified these stages as being the big buckets, the big ideas, and the flow that you need to move through in order to grow your demand generation competency. It begins with a phase that we call learn, and then we go through align, and then select, then engage, and then resolve. And I'll talk about each of these phases individually. And the way we have this set up is that learn, align, select, and engage is really like a series of lenses that you go through to magnify into the result that you're trying to drive for your company. And within results, you can have a low intensity, a moderate intensity, and a high intensity. So let me take you through these phases of the LASER approach and see if they might make sense to you. The first phase is what we call learn. And really in the learn phase, this is where you as the marketing group or you as the VP or the director of marketing, you're really having to educate yourself first, and then you're trying to educate everybody else. And in that education process, it's a really hard thing to do because you're actually redefining the role of marketing when you start talking about demand generation. And you can step on a lot of toes that way. It's a little bit like the analogy of 8-track tapes. And if any of you are old enough to remember 8-track tapes, I am certainly old enough to remember 8-track tapes. You know, you pop them in, and you could have music on the go, and it was a great, great, great concept. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Now we can download music digitally from the internet. It is so easy to access music in new and different ways than what we had to do when we had 8-tracks. The role of marketing really has changed that much when you think about our traditional role and what we're now able to do with demand generation. One of the things that we've been playing around with lately at the Petowitz Group is something we call the Marketo Experience. And it's just a way that we get marketing, sales, and senior management engaged in an experiential activity online so they can actually feel and experience and see what a Web 2.0 solution can do for them. And we have found great success with that. And we can certainly share that with anyone who wants to get more information about how to have people experience it so you can help get buy-in and budget for your own demand generation efforts within your company. So learning is the very first arena. It's easy for you to learn. It's hard for you to convince everybody else in the company. The next part of the process is what we call align. And again, if you remember back to the interviews that we had, the number one thing that the leaders in demand generation said that you need to do to be successful was to align with sales. So once you've got the education process begun, you need to align with sales. This is even before you probably have even looked at technology. Common goals, common metrics, common definitions. And something that we have done that really helps people align sales and marketing is really an exercise that we call building use cases. Now, anyone can do this. Great example, one of my clients, Nosco, they're a printing company based in the Midwest, 100-year-old company. And before we even bought a marketing automation system, we had sales and we had marketing in the same room, and we talked about the business. We talked about how they sell. We talked about who they sell to. We talked about who those personas are. And we identified a set of use cases so that once they begin their demand generation program, they're going to come off the blocks fast and furious. And through these conversations and through these dialogues and through the building of these use cases, Nosco has done a great job of getting sales and marketing on the same page, so much so that when first leads go over to sales, it'll be by a set of definitions that was defined by sales with marketing. So really getting that alignment and getting sales part of that conversation early is incredibly important. So we've talked about learn, we've talked about align, now we talk about select. And in the perfect world, this is the process that you would go through. You can use the use cases that you built in the align phase to help you vet what kind of company would provide you the best set of solutions. And I frequently get asked, who's the best company or what's the best set of solutions? Look at your use cases. What do you need to have happen in your business? What are your goals? What assets do you have? What are you trying to achieve? You build out those use cases, and it will help you in the selection process. I was recently working with a technology services company located on the West Coast, and this was the exact process that we went through. We did internal education. We got buy-in from senior management. We did the align process. We did a series of workshops, aligning sales and marketing, building use cases, and we actually used those use cases to go in and vet the solutions that they were looking to buy. And they made a choice, okay? So from this point on, it's all about engagement, right? And in the engage phase, you deploy the technology, you integrate whatever needs to be integrated, you train, and you staff. And I really want to focus on staffing for a moment here, and I actually just wrote a blog about this. This seems to be the area where a lot of marketers fall down. You cannot think that lead generation is just another thing to do on the list. It requires dedicated effort. It's not something you can pick up every once in a while, and just because you bought the technology, this thing is going to work. And a great example is a company called Knowledgy, which is a communications company based here in Atlanta, Georgia. And they recently have gone through this process, and they've done a very, very smart job of staffing. So they have a person who is responsible for strategic. Here's what our demand generation needs to accomplish. Here's the way we're going to go about it. And they also have someone that's dedicated to actually using the software and really maximizing the software and doing the analytics. So you need a strategist, you need a power user, and you need someone who's going to be very, very good at analytics. Depending on the size of your company, this could be 3 full-time roles, or they could be part-time, but they have to be consistent. Again, you can't buy the software and say, my job is done, and walk away. You have to staff for it. The final phase is what I call the results phase. And if you think we've gone through learn, align, select, engage, and results is where it all happens. This is really the operationalizing of everything that you've put together. And I've identified 3 phases here that line up with the low intensity, moderate intensity, and high intensity. And they're the beginner, the intermediate, and the advanced phases. Now, in the white paper that's coming out to you, you're going to see a great deal of detail at this level. And what we have done is for each of these 3 phases, we have said, here's what your metrics are going to look like. Here's what segmentation should look like. Here's what your database typically would look like, your assets, the campaign design, the calendar, the lead management process, and you can see the other things that are there. So let me give you an example of how you would go from beginner, intermediate, to advanced. Typically, let's take metrics, for example. Typically in a beginner company, they're not really doing a whole lot of measurement because their systems and their processes just aren't in place. There's a lot of hypotheses around things. They will track email opens. They will track the percent that click through, and they will track the number of leads that they give to sales. And they may track a few other things, but that's typically what we see in a beginner company. In an intermediate company, what you would add to that is the quality of lead that's coming from marketing has now gone through a lead scoring process. So that's a metric that tells me this is a marketing qualified lead, and it is qualified as marketing can get it given the tools that they've got. Another metric would be once that marketing qualified lead goes over to sales, sales immediately accepts or rejects that lead based on the common set of definitions that sales and marketing put together. So it then becomes a sales accepted lead. And then if sales actually turns that into an opportunity, it can become an opportunity. So you would have an additional set of metrics that go deeper into the sales cycle. And in an advanced company, this is a completely closed loop, very predictable process. You know, X number of marketing qualified leads will give you X percent of sales qualified leads. And if they're not qualified, there's a process to put them back into marketing, and the systems track, and you have access to this data 24/7. Again, few companies are at that end, but everything is in place as far as a tool perspective for that to happen. So we've looked at these beginner, intermediate, and advanced phases across all of these segments. So the question would be, where are you in this phase? And again, once we send you the white paper, which will be coming out shortly, we'll be more than you can take a look at it, and hopefully this will give you some great information so that you can either get going or take yourself to the next level. So that's what we call our laser approach, and again, we are just now kicking this off. We think it's going to provide a great deal of benefit to companies, no matter if you're the beginning or if you're in the middle of what you're doing. And again, we would love to hear back from you on what you think about these phases and if you've experienced anything like this. But I think if you take a look at 2009 and if you take a look at lead generation, this one particular document can be a roadmap for you. It tells you how to get from A to Z, and there's lots of ideas and lots of things that you can borrow from this process to put in place within your own companies. So that's really the end of our discussion. I'd like to open it up for Q&A. And as we've been talking, I've seen a number of questions come over. So let me just answer some of those questions. Let's see. The first question I have is, Give us a definition of a lead. What did sales and marketing agree to as to what is considered a lead? That is an excellent question. And I know that as a marketer, it's a question that probably 99.9% of us struggle with. And certainly as I go in and I work with companies, this is the most foundational thing that you have to have in place for a lot of different reasons, and yet it so frequently does not exist. So we actually spend a lot of time helping companies come up with that. But the answer to the question, what is the definition of a lead, is it depends. If you can get sales and marketing in the same room, and if you can begin with when sales hands a lead over to, when marketing hands a lead over to sales, what does sales expect? What would make sales pick up the phone and call that lead immediately? And then you can work back from there. And again, I've seen some companies have very lots of steps in what I call their lead funnel. And then I've seen companies that had a few steps in their lead funnel. And it depends on, is it going from marketing directly to sales? Or is there an inside sales group that it's going to go to for additional qualification? But typically we see something like raw leads to marketing qualified leads. A marketing qualified lead is someone that has gone through a complete lead scoring system, and it meets all the criteria that sales needs to accept it. So marketing qualified lead to sales acceptance lead, to sales accepted lead, to sales qualified lead, to opportunity. So again, everyone does it differently, but the place to start the conversation with sales is, sales, if we give you a lead, what do you need to have to say, wow, I need to pick up the phone and call that lead? And then you back the conversation up. Do you have the tools in place to find out these things? And that's really where the discussion comes from. So I hope that answers your question. That is a great question. Serious Decisions, S-I-R-I-U-S, has done great work coming up with a set of lead definitions that actually have been adopted by a lot of people. So you can check out the Serious Decisions website as well. Okay. Here's a question here about blogging. I know I personally do a lot of blogging, and you can go to www.pedowitzgroup.com, and you can take a look at our blog. We try to blog somewhere between 2 to 5 times a week, and I like blogging because I'm in an emerging category. There's lots of exciting thoughts, lots of exciting ideas, and if I'm having a conversation with a client, my thought always is, somebody else could benefit from this, so we actually do a lot of blogging. And whether or not you should blog, whether or not you should use social media, it all gets back to who are you trying to reach and where do they go and how do they want to be touched. That would be my best piece of advice around social media and blogging. Here's another question. Let's see. How do you move from intermediate to advanced, and do you have any resource recommendations for that? That's a great question. And again, the resource question really is dependent upon a lot of things. It's depending upon how focused you are on demand generation as a competency in your company. It will also vary by the size of your organization. So I've got some companies who've got 7 people pretty much full-time working on lead generation for a company. I have companies where, you know, it's like 1 full-time equivalent across 2 or 3 people. But I think the resources that you really need to have in place for that would include, you need a strategist, somebody who really understands sales and can have the conversation with sales to make sure that you're doing things from a lead generation perspective that are going to count, that matter, and that can really, really impact the business. You need a power user, someone who's going to be using the technology, which is typically your marketing automation system in combination with your CRM system, and who can really do the things that you need to do, from building personalized landing pages to doing campaigns with pearls to doing emails, I mean, to building forms. There are a lot of different things that have to happen within the technology. And again, one of the reasons why we chose to partner with Marketo is because their technology is so easy to use. And that's very, very important when people have a lot of different things on their plate. You also need someone to do analysis, and that would be somebody who's got great critical thinking skills so that when you launch a campaign and you have a hypothesis around things that will happen, you can really dig in and get the true analysis so that you can adjust for the next time. So the strategist, the power user, and the critical thinker are really three roles that you absolutely positively have to have in place. Now, the other part is, how do you move from being intermediate to advanced? Some of the characteristics of someone in demand generation that's at an advanced level is that they have a run rate, and they have a predictable set of processes. So, for example, one of the companies I interviewed told me, we know that after we've dripped somebody for six times, they're going to become an opportunity. And we know that once they become an opportunity, we've got a 42% chance that they're going to close. And why do we know that? Because we've been doing it, and we've been watching the metrics. So in an advanced company, you're going to see nothing's a guess. Things by this time are predictable. Think about the idea of closed-loop reporting. Think about the idea of very mature processes for nurturing, for lead scoring, very sophisticated ways in which you are engaging with prospects and clients online. But again, very much typified by closed loop, and you know the run rate, and you can predict. Like sales, after a certain amount of time selling, can say, you know, we know that at the end of the quarter we close X amount of business. Well, you'll be able to say the same thing about all your efforts in lead generation. So moving from intermediate to advanced is probably one of the larger steps that you can take, and it is very, very technology dependent. Then we have a question. Let's see what we have here. We've got between tools such as email, pay-per-click, direct mail, telemarketing, et cetera, which are used most frequently, and what kinds of companies are getting the best results with various tools? That is a great question again. And as we take a look at all the tools that we as marketers have available to us to make an impact on our business, they are many and they are varied. And I would say that depending upon the company, these all get great results. What you have to think about is, what does your company need? And again, I get a lot of conferences and I'll see marketers, they'll have stars in their eyes around, oh, this tool's really neat and this tool's really neat. It's really not about how neat the tool is. It really is about, what are your goals? If you're leading lead generation and demand generation in your company, what is it that you are responsible for delivering? And if you'll keep that in mind, then you can back up and say, here are the tools that I need to use so that I can be successful and so that I can actually get a result. So, again, we're not seeing as much direct mail as we used to. I don't think that's a big surprise. The most frequent use for direct mail in the online world is people will use a direct mail piece. It'll have what's called a PEARL, or a personalized URL, and the person can go to that, like, PetowitzGroup/DebbieGuyGeesh.com URL, and when I go there, it'll say, welcome, Debbie, right? And the whole idea is to get me to complete a form so you can get my email information so you begin email marketing to me. Also, we like direct mail in combination with other things. So, you know, whether it's direct mail, telemarketing, we're seeing a lot of SMS. We're seeing a lot of uses for voicemail. For example, one of our specializations is in the sports vertical, and we have a number of NBA teams that are our clients. And a great use of multiple channels for them would be to record the voice of a player and send that voice of the player out to the people that you know this is their favorite player, saying, you know, season tickets are coming up and we'd love to see you in the stands. And then that's followed by an email or an SMS on their BlackBerry. And, you know, it's all about Web 2.0. It's all about personalization. And you get a very high response rate and also a very high conversion rate to that. The one thing I would like to talk about is telemarketing, and because that was part of your question. Telemarketing can be quite antiquated. So if you are doing a batch and blast and giving your telemarketers, here's the, you know, 5,000 that we sent out this morning, go knock them dead. That's about as antiquated a way to try to generate leads as 8-track tapes are to music. A much better way to do that is, again, with a marketing automation system, you can send that email out. And the people that raise their hand, The people that showed the most amount of activity, they went to 8-plus pages, they downloaded 2 white papers, and they went to see the demo, I think that person might be ready to accept a phone call from a telemarketer. And it's also much more efficient for the telemarketer because they're following up on people who are warm, people who have indicated an interest through their online behavior. So there absolutely positively is a role for telemarketing. Also, a lot of organizations that I work with, between the marketing qualified lead and before it goes over to sales, it'll go to a telemarketing group to try to set up an appointment. And typically, that kind of telemarketing group is working based on immediacy. So if you send a campaign out on Tuesday morning and you begin seeing people, again, who show a certain level of response, and it could be anything, 15-plus pages, the right pages, 2 downloads, a demo, whatever that is, and you surmise they would be interested in a phone call from you, then you want to call them as close to that event as possible. Studies show that the closer the follow-up is, the better, which also brings up one other point, and that is when you hand a lead off to sales, by the time a lead shows interest and you hand it off to sales, how much time is that? And if you can squash that, then you're going to, that could be a tactic for you in 2009. I was recently working with a client, and we went through the process. It was 2 weeks from the time the lead showed interest online before it got over to sales. So how many of those do you think actually converted? It was very, very, very few that ever actually got converted. So I think telemarketing definitely has its place, as does pay-per-click and using Google AdWords. I mean, these are all basic fundamentals in your arsenal for how you're going to bring quality leads into the organization. Again, my guidance and my counsel to you would be take a look at what result you're being held responsible for, and then you can decide where you need to spend your money on these tools so that you can generate the right kind of leads and also the right number of leads for your company. So I think that's about all the time we have for today. This will be available to you as a podcast. We'll be sending out both the voice and the PowerPoint part. We'll be making available the laser approach. Again, it is hot off the presses, and we would love to hear your comments about it. And then we'll also make available the research that we talked about at the beginning of the webinar. Again, I want to thank our partner, Marketo, for being a great host for today and making all of this available to you. So this is Debbie Guy-Giesch at debbie@pedowitzgroup.com. And if I can help you in your demand generation efforts in 2009, then I would love to hear from you. Thank you very much.